Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. And we've managed to mess up the sound for our engineer. We're sorry about that.
I got nothing.
Bill's got nothing. try those headset. You know, it always is an episode. There are people here who do a show right before us, and everything seems to work fine. Then we walk in, and uh-oh, nothing works.
I got nothing.
Bill's got nothing.
Huh. Yep. Do I have a mic?
You do.
Oh, okay, good.
Do you want to, let's see. So my name's Aaron Ryan.
Oh, there it is. Let me give you something, Bill.
Robert, under the table, you have to quit talking.
Still got nothing.
Everybody's got nothing.
Well, it shows that I'm getting something here.
Huh. Well, we got Bill on a real short leash today. Bill's going to have to stand up.
Oops.
Not good.
Okay, we're here.
Huh.
Temporarily.
So, after that, because who wouldn't want to be our sponsor, right? Should we talk about other things before we go there?
Yeah.
Let's see, we've got Robert under the desk struggling. We've got Bill on a short tethered rope. It's fun for everybody.
Yeah. Hmm. So what's going on today? Who are you?
I already said. I already confessed that I was Aaron Ryan.
Oh, okay. Well, who's our sponsor today?
Yeah.
Yeah, sponsors, Pape Machinery,
whoa,
of course.
I thought you were having me do it. I was like, wow, this is new. I'm all excited.
We're not that messed up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, our sponsor today is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And if you need anything John Deere, anything ag, go by and see them. They do it all over there. They do part sales service, and they can get you fixed up. Right now, they're doing a booming business in service. So if you got a tractor or a mower or something needs to be fixed up, go by and see them. Their phone number is 226-9226, and you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Just thought I'd leave you hanging there for a second.
Oh, no, that's okay.
So we should hear, before we get too much farther along down the trail, let's switch headsets so you don't have to stand here for 2 hours leaning over the table. Our guest today is really fun, though. Thank goodness. Thank goodness somebody knows what they're doing. We haven't had William Kay on for a while. He's probably like, God, these guys have gotten even worse since the last time I talked to them. They're complete goofballs. Well, let's see. Our friend, William Kay, started coming on with us in December of 2011. So he was one of our very first favorite people, which is kind of awesome. And he has a website. Let's not forget about that one. Ecofascism.com. Great site. Has tons of information. The purpose is to expose both the similarities between environmentalism and fascism and the connections between environmentalism and modern fascistic or arch-conservative individuals and groups. Really individual, unique perspective, and always very well-researched. He lives in Alberta, Canada. He hosted a program in Vancouver on the radio until, gosh, I know, no one's ever heard about this, right? Especially with what's going on with all the protests and the burning the buildings down. But intolerant, free speech-hating environmentalists drove him off the air. I can't believe they haven't driven us off the air yet. We've been on here for like 10 years.
What's the deal there? Or nobody.
We live in a small town. Bonus.
You're having me on. Don't worry.
The Chinese have our number, though.
That's right. The Chinese hate us. And you know what? I added two things to the page for William today, actually. And I should tell you, we're airing May 31st of 2020, in case we replay this at another time and you don't understand why we talked about people burning down buildings. So on our website at wethepeopleradio.us, I do hope you go on there. Just click on the page for today, May 31st, 2020, and it gives you the link to the Canada Free Press articles that he writes and also the link to Global Research, which is a center for research on globalism. So for those of you that are into following those topics or like to research those things, he has a lot of really good material on there. And I found out right before we left the house, actually, that he also has books.
What?
I didn't know about books. What the heck, William? You've been writing books, too?
Yeah, I've got a couple of books online. I've got one book that deals with the history of the global population control movement. It's a sort of a primer. It runs through about 200 years of history in about 200 pages. But
And we did a show about that with you, actually. We did a show.
Population control, yep.
Yep. If people are in, you know, you hear that every now and then. Oh, it's about population control. And people are like, oh, that's ridiculous. Seriously? Go to our page.
Oh, it's a coherent movement with a budget of about $40 billion that's been promoting abortion and sterilization, things around the world. But it sort of ties into today's topic, because if you looked at the that Montreal article on the Montreal nursing homes, I tied it very closely to the Montreal area euthanasia movement. And they dominate the political scene there. And they've dramatically liberalized euthanasia in Montreal. And it's the same people who dominate the medical establishment there. And Montreal is very much like what you have in the New York, Boston area in the United States. You have an area with these enormous COVID-19 death tallies, like far out of whack with the rest of the country. And if you look closer, the deaths are almost entirely in nursing homes. So it's interesting that one of the main websites would only print that story if I deleted any reference to the Montreal euthanasia movement.
Oh, interesting.
He didn't want to go down that road. He just wanted, what's that?
Interesting. That they made you take that out before you could print the article?
Yeah, because he didn't want to make that connection. I don't know, it's sort of, anyway, that's their trip. I get all kinds of things sort of weird. You want to have sort of half rewrite the article for you. But that hasn't happened there. I didn't do it with the stuff I've done so far on New York. I just there's just only so much you can put in, like 1,100 or 1,200 word article. That's one that's definitely coming. Like New Jersey passed a really liberal euthanasia bill like 3 months before COVID. Not that they had any foresight. It just leads to an understanding of the medical establishment in that area. You find a lot of people there are very frustrated euthanasia people. They haven't been able to get the sort of laws passed that they wanted to, and they've been pressing for decades. So that's I don't want to put that in the foreground, because it's really it's more sort of a latent motive within this community. They had other sort of upfront ulterior motives. What I wanted to talk about was the whole business of patient seeding. Are you familiar with that concept?
Oh yeah, yeah. I read the articles you sent us, and I was shocked at what we don't know about what's going on with these nursing homes. It's shocking.
You know, to me, the key article, there's an Associated Press article. I'm going to pop it up right here now, which I hyperlink on one of my articles, and it dates, the one I've got now is May 21st. And they estimate that 4,500 COVID-19 patients were sent from hospitals in New York State to nursing homes in New York State. And that would have happened over about a 5-week period. And I'm estimating just in New York State, about 300 nursing homes had major outbreaks.
Wow.
And it happened in New Jersey. It happened in, like I mentioned, that one, sort of the Boston Newark megapolis. It's basically a consolidated city there. Newark, New York, Stamford, Hartford, Providence, Boston. It's a consolidated city there. And this policy appears to have been conducted right across that city, that whole megapolis. And I'm not exaggerating, because some of the Connecticut and Massachusetts and New Jersey are giving pretty good statistics. New York is just lying like crazy to minimize their nursing home body count. But right now in Massachusetts, there's 6,700 dead from COVID, 4,300 nursing home residents.
Wow.
And they are trying to put their thumb on the scale to minimize that number. And every one of those states, you know, 50 to 100 nursing home workers dead. There's some nursing homes where 5 workers died in 1 month. And it was all back to this business of when the pandemic first started to hit, these big hospitals, and these are some enormous companies, these health systems on the East Coast, they just started to shunt their patients to nursing homes. And a lot of these nursing homes had no ability to handle it. There's a video online you could find. There was one nursing home that was given 58 COVID patients, like here.
And they weren't senior citizens?
Oh, yeah, they were all senior citizens. Okay. They had to be some sort of reason to send them there, right?
Okay, yeah, that's what I wondered.
What wasn't going to happen is they weren't going to have them in the hospitals. The hospitals had to clear their deck. to make room for COVID-19 patients, which makes no sense. But it said to make room for the potential wave of intensive care COVID patients. There's an excellent quote online from one of the leading doctors involved in California's long-term care industry. He's a spokesman for a society in California, and he makes it really big. And these people who protested immediately when New York and New Jersey started just flat out sending them to the these nursing homes. And he says, you know, for every one you send, within a couple of weeks, you're going to get 20 back. And that's exactly what happened in New York. Like, the hospitalizations there are way out of line.
Yeah, because their numbers just mushroomed uncontrollably. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be right back with our guest, William Kay. He is on with us for the full show, so even though we had a little fumble at the outset, we're all good now.
Oh, we're locked down.
We're all good now. You're going to get a ton of great information. So you can follow us at wethepeopleradio.us, and all the links to William's information are on there. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee.
Somehow we got this song. I guess it was just because William's from Canada, so I guess we'd just throw down and get the America thing in there.
Yeah, I guess so. We're out of control.
Last time William was on here, we learned that the Canadians don't all really hang on the national anthem like we do. Remember that? I've laughed about that so many times. He said, yeah, they don't really know the words. They change them all the time. I just want you to know for the past 2 years, we've still been laughing about that.
True.
Oh, that's funny.
So with the nursing home, one of the things that I thought was astounding was the fact that they're sending all these people to the nursing homes. Nursing homes had no ability to isolate patients with their air systems and whatnot. So it was pretty much a guarantee once you started sending people there that everybody in the place was going to get it.
Well, yeah.
And
add to that, I've probably come across, like, there's a lot of good local journalism, like the Long Island Chronicle, and, you know, there's a lot of those local papers are really talking to the people from the homes themselves. I've come across, I'd say, a dozen articles where they mention not only not isolate the person, that person was going into a dormitory.
Oh.
Where there was, like, you know, I don't know, half a dozen other beds.
Right.
One toilet. I mean, it's just the opposite of a quarantine. You're taking infected people and you're putting them there. On March the 28th, you know, Cuomo and Zucker and the other one, they sent out that directive to every nursing home in New York State saying that you will take whatever patient you are sent by a hospital, and you are not allowed to ask if they've got COVID-19, and you are not allowed to test them for COVID-19. You are going to take them. That's bottom line. And they would have only have sent that had there not, because they start the letter by saying, just to clarify things. Because you could tell they were already trying to send these patients to the nursing homes, and a lot of the nursing homes are refusing them, saying, we don't have the gear to handle this.
Sure.
And then that letter went out. The identical letter goes out in New Jersey 2 weeks later. The identical letter went out on March the 8th, or almost 3 weeks earlier, in Lombardy, Italy.
The same exact wording?
I haven't read the Italian one, but it was to the exact same effect. It was forcing all local nursing home owners to receive these people. And they were really lowballing the risk at the time. And they paid them 160 euros per patient they took in. The granddaddy of these biobombings of nursing homes was one in downtown Milan. It's a 1,000-unit nursing home. Sometime after March the 8th, they received what they were told were 19 recovering COVID patients. Within 2 or 3 days of them receiving those 19 patients, seven of them died. I mean, they were recovering.
Oh, wow. Great recovery.
They were in the meat throes of it.
Sure.
And a couple of the accounts, they use phrases like in the blink of an eye or, you know, in a few days, the place was completely overrun. Staff had asked to use protective gear. They were denied. They were forcibly told they couldn't even bring their own from home because you're scaring the patients. So there was a week or two there, nobody was wearing protective gear, and it just ran rampant over the building. I'm not exaggerating. The last body count was 405 in one nursing home.
Holy
and that
God.
Is the granddaddy of them all. Although I would say in the Boston, New York, Newark area, we've probably got 40 to, you know, 60 that have over 100 deaths in one facility.
So like 40%
account after account.
40% of the beds were dead people at that point.
Yeah.
Wow.
There was one in New Jersey. It was the whole wings of it had been abandoned. So many workers had got sick. Everyone stopped showing up. Police went in there. They found 17 dead bodies stacked in one room. This is in New Jersey. There's a lot of these facilities. They're reporting it, and they're underreporting. But that particular facility is in Andover, New Jersey. They're still right now claiming that only 71 have died. There was a lawsuit filed in late April said that already by that time, 84 had died. So if you go to this, you know, all over the place, I'm saying there's hundreds of these facilities that have had these massive outbreaks, and there's nowhere else in the United States are they that concentrated. There was a really bad one in Washington State early on.
Yeah, that was one of the first ones.
And was that the same thing?
Yeah, it was not seeding. I don't know how it happened there. It just happened by accident. It does happen by accident, but when it should have been a total object lesson, because by the time they passed, they issued that decree to all the hospitals, to all the nursing home administrators that you were going to take these people, the lessons of that Kirk County, Washington one were well known. I mean, they had already had 30 or 40 dead. Half of the residents were in ICU in hospitals. It was a disaster. It was an accidental entry of the virus into a nursing home. But it should have told everyone in America. The CDC wrote a report 2 days on the 27th of March saying you're just how dangerous it was. And it was looking at the Kirk County example of how we just got to completely quarantine off all nursing homes. And that was before Cuomo and Tucker and these guys sent out that letter telling these guys you're going to have to take them and then sending 4,000 infected patients into nursing homes.
So the CDC had prior to the Cuomo order, the CDC knew and had publicly stated that that was a danger.
Oh, yeah. They go into details. They've done a couple of estimates on how easily people could shed the virus, how easily asymptomatic people could shed the virus in the nursing home environment. Also, okay, they write that letter, I think March 28th. It was not until April the 19th that they made it, they prohibited COVID-19 positive workers from working until that time. So from March 28th to April the 19th, they're just pouring infected inpatients into these nursing homes. And they've got workers in those homes who are testing positive, and it is not a requirement for you to stop working. And they're working without PPE, and they're working in multiple homes.
Oh.
That
yeah,
went on for
good.
A solid month.
Yeah.
Now, this is you can only describe it as a deliberate attempt to spread this virus. It beggars my imagination that anybody would commit these many homicides intentionally. My theory was that at the very early times of this pandemic, the fear amongst the sort of the hospital bureaucrats and the sort of medical complex of the U.S. Northeast and others was that it was going to be a dud. There wasn't going to be much of a pandemic. And they thought that by sort of getting the ball bouncing, by sending these patients into nursing homes, they'd get things going. And you can tell by about April 16th, Howard Zucker, the minister of the health commissioner of New York State, he's now starting to put the brakes on it. He calls this an emergency telephone conference with every one of the 600 nursing home operators in New York State, and he forces them to draw up lists of all the people they think that they've died from COVID and all the ones that they know have lab tested, et cetera, and they start really manipulating the statistics. But you can tell it's kind of a Frankenstein's monster story. I mean, they definitely wanted to introduce these infections into these nursing homes, but I think they underestimated. This is a totally new virus. They really underestimated just how much damage this virus could do in a nursing home. There's account after account of, you know, within a few days, the place is in complete panic. I mean, it's spreading so rapidly. There's so many sick workers. There's so many people refusing to work. The workload has increased so much. And when this happened in Montreal, there were nursing homes for the really sort of seriously bedridden people. There was one staffer per 30 workers. So many staffers were sick or refusing to work. And so there were people dying of dehydration. There's just horror stories coming out of Montreal.
Oh, my God.
You know, once again, it's the police and the army eventually has to go in there. Across much of Montreal, there's about 15 nursing homes that are being run by the Canadian Army right now.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're getting sick.
Wow.
And they issued this scathing report. But again, it was more than anything, it was sort of the epidemic amongst the nursing home working staff causes this absolute chaos.
Right.
Like in home after home, I'm reading these accounts of various homes in New Jersey. Within a day or two, nobody's answering the phone. Nobody's at the front desk. Like whatever limited staff they have, they're all in IC units or makeshift IC units in the backs of these nursing homes where dead bodies are going out a couple times a day.
Hmm. And nobody is reporting at this point.
No, they are reporting it right now. The initial statistics were very vague about exactly who was dying. And they were doing that deliberately to exaggerate the impact of the virus. Like, there was those two California doctors who gave that video that got pulled off YouTube.
Yeah,
but
right.
They hit the nail on the head. You know, the broader healthy population was not at risk at all. But a lot of the early death data coming out of the pandemic promoters really obscured exactly who was dying. And it was only after a couple of weeks into this that we started realizing, you know, that a quarter of them were over the age of 90. And then as time wears on, you realize, A, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, that tight cluster of five states, they have about 55% of U.S. deaths are all in that one spot. And then further investigation, you realize that overwhelmingly, you know, probably the major 70 to 80% of all those deaths are in nursing homes that these clowns I have total watch and supervision over. Mm. And it's Cuomo, the guy that's going on national television telling us how to do pandemics.
Right.
And he's watching over just a mass extermination.
We've got to take a break, but yeah, let's talk about that when we get back. The Cuomo show that I think was
the Mario Brothers.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the giant Q-tip,
the big cover up.
Hope that destroys both their careers. Anyway, you are listening to We the People. Our guest today is William Kay. You can find all the information about the program and previous shows with this guest, which are really informative. You can catch all that at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Well, there you go, William. Perfect song for the Cuomo brothers.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about Andrew Cuomo. Like, I mean, I don't think I picture him as kind of a bit thick. You know, like not entirely that bright. He's someone who obviously you know, was born and married into high politics of the area. And I don't know if he has a sort of the evil intent that I see in Howard Zucker, like the health commissioner. I mean, well, my question is, what did Cuomo know and when did he know it? Like, how did he understand this whole patient seeding process? He knew it was going on. His name was on top of that one letter. But at that time, there was a lot of hype coming out of the hospital saying that we don't have enough space. We've got to clear away all this space for all these ICU units. That's why we've got to send these thousands of patients, these COVID patients, to these nursing homes. So maybe Cuomo he's just sort of signing on to this. He's totally deferring to Zucker, the health commissioner. That's my theory. I don't really think that he's someone who would actually sign off on something this off the wall.
Once that started, there's no way to put the genie back in the bottle. I mean,
but they kept doing
it. They did it until May the 10th. I'm not sure when they actually stopped doing it. They came out clearly. They rescinded that letter on May the 10th. So there's a 6-week period there. 7-week period there when when nursing homes had no choice. Like any hospital could say, that person's going to that home, boom, done. But I think my theory was that by late April, they had already pretty much stopped doing it. And they were just, for some reason, there was this other delay. I can't believe they were still doing it May the 10th. But of course, now they're holier than thou. When they announced the decision that they would no longer send a COVID-19 patients into totally unprepared nursing homes. They then announced these things that they're going to test every nursing home worker twice a week. Anybody with a resident of the nursing home who gets COVID is going to be immediately transferred out. So they've completely reversed themselves. And now there's posturing as the front line, as the vanguard in terms of tough regulations on nursing homes. But there was this, several-week period there, sending in the patients, disrupting the ability to use proper equipment in there. The same hospitals that were sending the patients to the nursing home were also hogging all the personal protective gear. And these hospital systems, they're much larger than these little nursing homes.
Sure.
So they made it very difficult for a several-week period for there to be any proper infection control, any proper testing in those homes. Now they're posturing, as the paragons of geriatric hygiene, but this is not what they were doing before. There's a really important article in the Federalist saying people just cannot let this article go away. There's a few, like One American Network had a couple of articles on it, and Fox has had a couple of good articles on it, but I just can't believe they're going to get away with this.
Do they actually have a number yet of how many folks were infected in nursing homes in New York? I mean,
to the actual number. You can go to the New York Health Authority has that. What they obscure is death in nursing home. When Health Commissioner Howard Zucker had his emergency April 16th teleconference with 614 nursing home operators, he was already in a panic at that time.
Right.
And I can't remember where I was going with it.
Well, so I know they were taking
okay, what
the
he
death.
Did, okay, now I remember where I was going with that. He ordered them that on their list of deaths, you are not allowed to include anybody who died off facility.
Right.
So if they're in the ambulance going back to the hospital, they're not counted. That you can have a 15-year resident at a nursing home, contracts the virus at the nursing home, dies a day after being shipped to the hospital. That is not considered a nursing home death
exactly.
In New York, and it's the only state that's doing that.
So there's no way they're ever going to come up with that.
So you get all the numbers you want, but you can't get nursing home death out of New York.
Right. So they'll never have an accurate number on how many people were actually
infected. Oh, no. There are so many lawsuits right now. There's already class action lawsuits. There are hundreds of lawsuits for wrongful death that have already been launched. They are going to dig it up. They are going to dig up the time of every hospital transfer to every nursing home. They're going to dig up. What they could start with in New York is On January 1st, there was 101,000 people living in nursing homes. You have a list of actual people with actual names. I'm saying that already 20,000 of those are dead.
So this
isn't going to end. So that's another way. You look at the aggregate death figures. They're not going to get away with it.
No.
They just have to try to stretch it out as long as they can and mystify the issue as much as they can.
And when you look at those numbers, and you compare it to the total number of deaths in New York, it's really not a pandemic on the streets. It's a pandemic in.
Oh no, good point. Yeah, this is entirely within institutions because it's
right.
Also rampant in the hospitals.
Right.
And get this, talk about like just evil intent. There's a Long Island Chronicle article about the systematic putting of COVID patients into detox facilities around the city, and a lot of them have had 10, 15 fatalities. So there's a wider picture because the geriatric wards in a lot of the hospitals rampant in there. So if you think of, I did it with Montreal. I came to the conclusion it was over 90% of all fatalities were inside government-run institutions or government-regulated institutions.
Right.
It was not an issue on the street.
And I gotta believe
even
that
California,
that's the same
California.
Thing in New York.
Yeah,
it's got to be the same. I mean, it's not. It's in the institutions where the problem is, and here they've locked down the entire city, closed people's
yeah.
businesses, and made a big mess out of this when the problem wasn't there.
Yeah, they were looking over it. Just give you some scale here. New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, collective population, 40 million. It's almost identical to the collective population of California, 40 million. COVID deaths in those five connected states, 55,000. Same population, California, COVID deaths, 4,200. Those states probably have, when the truth gets out, already over 30,000 nursing home deaths. California, 1,700 nursing home deaths. I mean, that's the difference in scale. These are the same population sizes.
Right.
One had 1,700 nursing home deaths. One had, 30,000 plus.
But the nursing homes.
How are they going to explain that?
Well, like the nursing homes around the country, I only really heard about the people being sent back to nursing homes once they'd been infected on the East Coast. Was that being? Were they saying to do that elsewhere, and just nobody followed the rules, or was that just
happening?
To
my knowledge, there's only a paper trail in four states. I think it is New York, New Jersey, Michigan. And I think maybe Illinois. But if I'm looking at Massachusetts and Connecticut, and they are so similar to what happened in New York and New Jersey, where we have these letters with the governor's name on top saying, you're going to take these patients. There's a paper trail in New York and New Jersey. I just don't think that paper trail exists in those other states in that region. But you're right. I would say probably 46 of the states of the union, or 45 of the states of the union, never did this, never did patient seeding. California's death per million from COVID, 107. New York State's death per million, 1,538. And if you get into places like the Bronx, it's way over 2,000 deaths per million. California, once again, is 107 deaths per million, which is like nothing compared to what happened over there.
Right.
You got to wonder, like, is this the same virus? Are we talking about the same disease here?
Right.
Yeah.
Massachusetts, almost 1,000. Connecticut is over 1,000 deaths per million. The top five in the U.S. are those five states in terms of deaths per million. New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island. And they are just one tight, integrated unit that has been ruled by the Democratic Party as a one-party state for 50 years.
Mm.
And there isn't a person working in the medical industrial complex on the government side of the equation who wasn't appointed by those people.
Well, that's... Mm-hmm.
That says a lot.
Yeah, that gives you pause.
Any connection between the medical... folks in those states, the people making decisions or advising the governor, any connection between those people?
Okay, put on your space helmets. I'll explain. There are these space age organizations. They are ultra-modern organizations. They hardly exist anywhere else in the world. They are non-profit societies. There are no shareholders. But over a long period of time, the managers of these enterprises manipulate and co-opt the board of directors or the board of trustees into the point where they are basically a rubber stamp of what the managers do. But if the managers fight amongst themselves, then they have to go back to the board to sort it out. But some of these have turned into large enterprises. And what you find in New York, New Jersey, Boston, Connecticut, and Rhode Island are these things called health systems. There's now, it's no longer Mount Sinai Hospital, it's Mount Sinai Health System. And they own a dozen hospitals and clinics and what have you. But some of these are immense enterprises I never even knew existed. There's one called Hackensack Meridian. And it is it's confined, because it's a nonprofit society, it can only operate inside New Jersey. But it owns 17 hospitals. It has 34,000 employees. There's another one. It's a nonprofit society called Partners Health. And it is confined to operating only within Massachusetts. And it owns 7 full hospitals. It has 75,000 employees. Its medical supply equipment budget is over $3 billion a year.
Wow.
So across this area, this sort of Boston New York Ages area, there's a couple of dozen of these. Well, they're nonprofit societies, but they usually have the word health system in their name. And amongst those group, this group of about two dozen nonprofit corporations, they probably own about 100 or so hospitals, and those would be the largest, newest hospitals in the area. A lot of them also own long-term care facilities, but they don't have a big part of that action. But these are big fish in little ponds. They're all integrated into the local university systems. Quite often they have co-joint ventures with a university's medicine department. They reap huge amounts of government grants. Just that Mount Sinai health system, they pull in about $400 million a year just in U.S. federal government research and development grants. So they get money from philanthropists. They get money from running these hospitals like commercial enterprises. And the senior executives of these things are very well paid. Generally, salaries of an executive of one of these health systems would range from about $7 to $12 million a year. And the executives are there's a lot of executives. There's that Hackensack Meridian one. There's probably 30 executives making over $1 million a year.
Gosh, so while they're a nonprofit society, that explains the cost of the band-aid.
Yeah, it sounds like nonprofit business
is doing well. Okay, we've got to take a little break in the middle of this. Sorry, okay. I hate to bust your momentum here. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
No problem.
You are listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Probably use that when you interview some of these people. You just send that like as a little, you know, sound file with your inquiries. This is a music-rich environment, unfortunately, on a very dire topic. But okay, so go back to the web of nonprofit hell.
What were 30 or 40 years ago individual hospitals and smaller nonprofits have morphed into these hospital chains, but they also own all kinds of clinics and ambulance centers and what have you. Like I gotta say, these are big fish. Can you imagine, you know, employing 70,000 people in Boston? Like how big a fish you are in Boston. But there's another aspect to it is these hospitals are major purchases of medical supplies, and they're also major purchases of pharmaceuticals. And there's a lot of research and development going on with, you know, ever, you know, cutting-edge scalpels, no pun intended, and other pharmaceuticals and things like that. These guys are got a front-row seat on that. So you've got some of these hospital executives who are making $10 million a year. They're also overseeing a medical equipment purchasing budget of multiple billions of dollars a year. So there's all kinds of opportunity for these people to sort of meld into this whole community that manufactures pharmaceuticals and manufactures medical equipment. When it gets to the issue of the patient seating process, you can see how easy it would be for these big outfits, like, you know, New York City Health and Hospitals and Montefiore. There's a lot of these groups. They have like 11 hospitals. They have, you know, 40 facilities around New York City. It'd be very easy for them to just grab up whatever protective equipment there was available. And these nursing homes, a lot of which are independent, a lot of which are just strapped for cash, et cetera, they are no way during the initial month or 5 weeks of the crisis could they prevent the very hospitals that are sending them the patients from depriving them of any sort of protective equipment.
Right. Yeah, they've got a lock on all that.
How convenient.
And these are the guilty parties. I think they're this has to be mentioned. I'm trying to figure out how much does it cost to have a COVID-19 patient spend, you know, a day in the hospital or do a hospital stay. Like for every, it's a fraction of the overall people who test positive end up going to hospital. But what is the cost of that hospitalization? You know, three or four different estimates from, you know, different groups. It varies from around 20,000 to about 90,000. Per at the COVID stay, and the stays last from like 6 to 20 days. A lot of people stay in, from the moment they check in to the moment they leave, it's a 20-day stay. That is not uncommon. And hospitals are typically billing, anywhere from 20,000 to I saw 88,000 was one of them. That's if you get a ventilator, et cetera. And the numbers on hospitalization are the same sort of nonsense that you see with the numbers of deaths and everything else. Florida has a larger population than New York State. I think Florida's around 22 million. New York State's a little under 20 million, like 19.5 million. So Florida, larger population than New York State. Florida, throughout the whole crisis, has had fewer than 10,000 hospitalizations. It's about 9,800. New York State, it is now at 89,000. And they're going to hit 100,000 definitely, you know, within the week. And look how much those hospitals are charging for a one hospitalization. And they are dinging these hospital insurance companies, a lot of which are backed up by the government. And Trump and Cuomo and all these guys keep coming out saying, you know, sort of, we got your back. So they're just running these incredible bills. I mean, in New York State, it's approaching 90,000 hospitalizations. The cost per hospitalization varies from 20,000 to 88,000 or 90,000 around there again. So average that out to around 40,000, multiply that by about 90,000. That's how much those very same those hospitals like Mount Sinai Health Systems and Partner Health Systems and Montefiore Health Systems, they're the ones who now have all these patients. So it worked just like that guy from the California Long Care Society said would happen. He used the figure 20. That's the actual figure that comes back. And no, he was in the ballpark figure. Like for every, you know, COVID infection patient you stick into a nursing home, you're going to get 20 patients back at the hospital in the ICU unit. And that's what happened in New York. It's almost, of course, the number is going to keep rising over time. So at this point, it is almost exactly 20. Because they dispersed 4,500 patients, and now they've got their cumulative hospitalization is approaching 90,000. And there's like no other state of the union's got anything near that kind of hospitalization.
No,
I couldn't get California's cumulative number, but it would probably, you know, under 20,000.
And yet we hear hospitals are running at third staffing and doctors are getting laid off because there are no patients. How's that?
They kicked everybody else. Oh, that's because you're living in California. Like, in the initial panic, they're booting everybody out of the hospitals. People had other things to do. People who had customers, they all got booted out of the hospitals because they wanted these massive intensive care units, which never filled up in most parts of the union. They haven't even filled up in places like New Jersey, which is an underlying point. There never was a need to disperse all of those patients to the nursing homes. Like, there never was this grand shortage of hospital space anywhere.
No, there wasn't. I mean, even these, I was reading the other day about all these field hospitals and all these emergency facilities they built.
Underutilized.
Or not utilized at all, and they've taken them all down.
Yeah, whole floors of hospitals sitting there. I know. There was never an initial urgency, but this is exactly what they wanted in New York. You know, they were hoping, you know, we'll get tens of thousands, which they got. So they did. The hospitals themselves, these were put off in like 700-bed hospitals, and they morphed into like, you know, 2,000-bed hospitals. So some of these hospitals are making huge amounts of money.
God, you'd hate to think that was the motive, but it wouldn't be the first time that's ever happened.
They would have been totally on top of this. One thing that I find with absolute disturbing regularity as I go through, whenever I go, like, I go to this various website, and then I'll look up the About Us section, then I'll look up the People section, and I'll start going through the bios of all these people throughout this whole pandemic. And what you find again and again with absolute disturbing regularity is this is not their first rodeo. You find people, you know, this is, you know, he was involved in the SARS epidemic and then the MERS epidemic and then the bird flu and all those. You know, he'd been involved in all these various government programs, you know, up and down the line. That bio reoccurs hundreds of times. So when there was first a rumor that we were going to have a pandemic, these guys' ears all perk up. Yeah, I mean, this is now, you know, pandemic number 7 for Howard Zucker. They've been through this before. They know the importance of public relations. You know, they know the importance of death statistics and things like that. And they know that there's going to be oodles upon oodles of money to be made, middlemanning various medical supplies and things like that. You got, you know, Jared Kirsch and all these other clowns getting involved in that.
And you'd like to think that they've been involved in a bunch of other, you know, giant issues, so they should be really good at it by now, but unfortunately that line seems to be going the wrong way.
No, this is, they're clearly not.
Yeah, obviously.
Particularly the people that we get lectured to the most, like all those guys, they oversaw one of the greatest either medical fiascos or sort of one of the worst mass murders in modern history, which is what it really is. It's sort of they could plead sort of manslaughter on the last maybe 20,000 murders. Like, Your Honor, we only wanted to kill 1,000 of them or so, and then it just blew all out of proportion, and we couldn't put a stop to it. So maybe they could plead for a lesser sentence on the last 19 or 20,000 homicides, but first 1,000, no, you got to take those on the head.
Wow.
Man, you just about can't make that kind of stuff up, and with a lot of good research. So the articles, we're going to head out to our news break here in a couple of seconds, but you can look this all up. It's at wethepeopleradio.us, and William has done some amazing research. We'll be right back.
Ow! Who said I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want. Listen to me, Little Red Riding Hood.